This is Chuck Sickinga interviewing Mrs. Isabel Bills for the Tri-Cities Museum on August 27th, 1991.
This is Isabel Bills of Spring Lake. I was born Isabel Smith way back in 1913. I was born at 1314 Washington Street. I lived there until I was about 6 years old and moved down one block to the old folk home at 1221 Washington, and I lived there until I was married. So I have lived in the eastern part of Grand Haven all my early life.
Okay. Do you have an earliest remembrance from the eastern part of Grand Haven?
Well, of course, it's a lot different than it is now, although most of the houses are still there. There's been some added to it. I'm speaking mainly of the east end as from Albee Street east.
Okay.
At that time, Peoria Street was not paved. Because when I started to go to school over at the 4th Ward School, we had to cross the sandy Peoria Street. Huh. It's that long ago.
Okay. Other than the sandy road on Peoria, as compared to today, what did the neighborhood look like in those days?
Well, there were fields. That is, empty lots where you could go and play if you wanted to. There was a place to set up a little baseball diamond or something without disturbing any. And one of our favorite games was Run, Sheep, Run. And we played that about twilight, and we could go all over the neighborhood, hide anywhere we wanted to, and nobody objected.
What were the rules of that game? How was it played?
Oh, that was an old-timer. There were two sides, and one side would go and hide somewhere altogether. One person would come back, and he would cross his fingers. One finger would be the right direction, and the other one would not be. But the seekers were going to would choose which way they would want to go. The one that came back from those hiding would call to them and give them signals as to where they are. He would put in a lot. Maybe apples would be we're near. Maybe peaches would be we're far away. And maybe strawberries would be get ready to run. And then when you got with so that you had to hurry to get back to goal before the other side caught you, why then he'd say, run my good sheep, run. Of course he would say all kinds of fruit all the time he was yelling, because that would mix up the opponents.
Mm-hmm. Everybody would have to know what was what, too. Mm-hmm. Were there any other games that were...
Oh, yes, we used to play lots of games. We didn't have everything. If we wanted to make something, we had to cut our own patterns. We didn't just take them out of a book.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of running games, tap on back, and... Oh, Mother May I, and Long Grass.
Uh-huh, Long Grass. How was that played? I've never heard of that before.
Well, my person was it, and he would start counting. And while he was counting, all the rest of the players would have to run away from him. That is, not to go and hide, but just run. And they'd say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Long Grass. Then you'd have to stop. And if you moved beyond that, well, then you had to come back and start over again. And then after a while, and say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, go forever. And then you would run and hide, and they have to find you.
Ah. So most of the running games were variations on hide and go seek.
A lot of them.
Same way when I was growing up. Okay, when you talk about a neighborhood like the East End, did the neighborhood have sort of its own identity? Did people living there associate with it like they would?
No.
Okay. Was it just a residential neighborhood, or were there stores there at that time?
There were a few stores, and then it bordered on the factory district, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
That would be, like, over where Jackson...
No, it would be the corners of Fulton and Beach Street.
Oh, okay,
there,
over by the Eagle Ottawa.
Is.
Right. And then, so it went to Albee Pennoyer, like the tannery, and, okay, I see the borders now. Okay. As a child, who else lived in your home?
Well, there was my mother and father, and my brother, who was 3 years older than I. But it seems that the relatives thought that if the man had a grocery store, it didn't cost anything to feed them. So there was always somebody extra living with us, an aunt or an uncle. Sometimes both.
Were they true in that assumption?
No, because after all, somebody had to buy the groceries to begin with.
What sort of things would you do as a family or with your family in those days?
Oh, we used to go on picnics, and there would be a big picnic, so there's a lot of families go together, and we go out to somebody's country home or something of that sort and have a big picnic. That was one of the favorite summertime things.
And would you get there by automobile then, or was it horse travel?
Well, yes, when we did have a car before that, wouldn't be able to have that kind of thing.
Right.
We just do things around home.
Okay. Speaking sort of generally or more specifically, if you'd like to make it that way, as children, what were expected of children in terms of behavior and conduct in those days?
Well, I think there children weren't so independent. They had to go according to what the regulations in the family were. Although my folks were not very strict, that is, they didn't lay the law down, so to speak. My father had an unusual way of setting goals for us. He'd say, "Now, don't you go out of the house again tonight. But if you do go, put your rubbers on."
And trying to think, what would be a typical punishment for a child in those days if a child got in trouble?
I don't know. I suppose sitting in a corner or something of that sort, or going without dessert, or something to be a little uncomfortable. I don't think there was much spanking or anything like that. At least there wasn't in our household.
Great. Okay, where did you start school? At the, you already said, the Fourth Ward School. And
yes, that's where Ferry School is now.
Right. What was that like?
Well, it was a brick building, and it had three floors, and it went to the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a square building, and it burned.
seen pictures of that. How were the classes structured in terms of, once again, what was expected of students, and how were they, how did teachers run the classes, and what was done?
Well, it was just a typical school. We did have art classes, and we did have music classes. A specialized teacher came in for those, and phys ed, too. But that was all done right in our own classroom. We didn't go to a room for music, and there was no piano. We just get our pitch from the pitch pipe.
Is that like something that...
Yes.
Ooh, they have like harmonicas or something mm-hmm. that do that now. So the process of school was more or less the same as it is today then back there, it sounds like.
Well, it was much simpler.
Much simpler. Mm-hmm.
And the subjects didn't have such a variety to them either.
In what ways would you say it was simpler?
Well, you had spelling and arithmetic, and you didn't have social studies. You had history and reading, of course. But they didn't do a lot of extra things. It was mainly geared by the textbook.
Okay.
I used to teach sixth grade, and it was part of what I had sixth grade taught to me.
Oh. Okay, as you moved up to the next level of school, junior high, what was
Well, we had to walk like? Down to the old junior high that was on 6th Street in Grand Haven. And we had the third floor of that building, the central grade school, which were part of the building, but we had the upper floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a long noon hour. We'd get out at 12 and wouldn't have to be back until 1:30. So we went home for lunch, and there was no provision for anybody staying during the noon hour. Everybody went home.
Everybody? Would people, if they had wanted to, been able to stay, or were they forced out?
They didn't have any choice.
Okay, no choice.
We had usually four subjects then, and then English and some type of history, some type of math, and some type of science. And then we had home ec, and that was divided into four sections. That is, we would spend 10 weeks in sewing and 10 weeks in cooking and so forth. And the boys would have wood shop and things of that
mm-hmm.
sort.
Okay, and then high school.
High school, building I went to is no longer there. It's where the playground is for, do they still call it Central School
down
there?
Yeah, still called Central School.
It was a good high school. We could choose our subjects. There's some course required for graduation. I had algebra and English and ancient history and algebra in the first year. And I had to teach chemistry and physics and French and Latin were the languages that we had taught at that time. They had a lot of extracurricular things, and glee club, and there was Camper Girls, and other clubs like that, as well as some that were athletic. I had a girls' soccer team, or a hockey team, field hockey. Things of that sort. Grand Haven had very good basketball teams.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking socially, as children reach their teenage years, what would they do to keep themselves occupied during their free time?
Well, they didn't tear around like they do now.
Right.
They hadn't the means, nor the money, nor really the desire. They would go out to the beach in the summertime, but you'd have to walk. Or you could walk down to... I was trying to think. If you went to 3rd and Washington, you could take the park car out. That was a streetcar that... Something like the cars in San Francisco.
Oh, streetcars. Was that an extension of the interurban line?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And you could go for a nickel. But a lot of times we walked. We walked a lot. We walked most every place we went.
Were people as obsessed by getting a tan in those days as they are now?
I don't think to the extent they are now. We go out there and have some fun and go swimming, but I don't think that... we didn't... It took longer to get there and back again, so we couldn't spend a whole day out there.
I was just wondering because I've read some books, I guess they were more from the 1800s than the 1900s, where the women wanted to be all covered up and it was supposedly bad for them to get any sun.
I remember seeing girls that were working out in the sun that would have something over their arms because they didn't want to get it.
What other things would teenagers do? Was there, like, any hangouts? Or
not particularly.
I've heard
there were a lot of church-related activities.
Such as?
Well, the churches would have activities for various Sunday school classes or for the whole Sunday school or something of that sort.
Okay. And... After high school, did you go on to more schooling?
I didn't right away. I was out of high school 2 years because I was entirely on my own resources, and so I had to earn some money. I became a telephone operator, and I worked at that for a couple of years, but then the Depression came, and many of the telephones were taken out, and so staff was cut down. Because I had taken trig in high school and could compute field acreage, I worked at the courthouse on a government program in computing field acreage. And I earned enough to put myself through college. I had jobs while I was in school. So, although I graduated young, I started school when I was 4 years old, and so I graduated young, so it really didn't matter very much.
So you were here in this area during the Depression, or in the bulk of it? How did that affect you personally and... To the best of your perceptions, the community as a whole?
Well, I have to do a little thinking on that.
Okay.
Because my dad had a grocery store, we didn't have problems that many do in debt as far as meals were concerned. But we had very low spending money. My allowance was 25 cents a week. But then 25 cents bought things.
What sort of purchasing power? Okay. What other sorts of things could you get? As I'm trying to get a estimation of what the purchasing power of a quarter would have been in those days?
I know one time on a sale, I bought a dress for 88 cents.
Okay. That's a pretty good bargain by today's standards.
But a lot of people did sewing. They didn't have the dress shops that they had. And my mother was a professional dressmaker, so I didn't have to buy dresses for any amount of money.
Yeah, and probably had always had nice ones, too.
Yes, I did.
It's very convenient. Okay, so your family owned the grocery store and ran that. I'd like to know a little bit about what a grocery store was like in those days.
Well, it's far different from the modern store. Mm-hmm. One of the big differences is that you didn't do wait on yourself at all.
Uh-huh.
There was a clerk behind the counter, and if you wanted a loaf of bread, the clerk would go and pick up the loaf of bread, which came from the bakery, unwrapped, and then have to wrap it up there at the store. Or anything else you wanted. If you wanted a pound of coffee, the clerk would weigh out the coffee and then put it through the coffee grinder. And you didn't wait on yourself.
Okay. So
you could go to the produce and pick out what you wanted.
Okay. Would that make for longer lines, would you say, or?
No, because a lot of people had their groceries delivered.
Oh.
They would call in with an order, or my dad would go around. He had certain routes that he'd go to and pick up the grocery order. He'd come back and fill it, and they had a lot of little market baskets, and they'd put each person's order in a market basket, and then in the afternoon, he'd go around and deliver all of those groceries.
Okay.
So there weren't as many people coming into the store.
Mm-hmm. Was there any charge for delivery then, or was it all done free?
And of course, it was done by horse and wagon. No gasoline involved.
Now, how much refrigeration was there back in those days? Were electric refrigerators common?
Oh, no. It was ice.
It was ice?
Mm-hmm. Big chunks of ice.
So I would imagine then people might go get groceries every week or 10 days. Did they shop daily?
Well, that varied.
That varied?
Mm-hmm. And if they needed something special, that would be different. I don't think he would deliver 5 pounds of sugar.
Okay, yeah. What products were carried in a grocery store now perhaps that are different than what you'd see if you went to Meijer's? Or so today.
Out of this, that the grocery store carried groceries and nothing else.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much. And groceries and produce. The only meat that my father had in this store were cans of corned beef and dried beef. He would get produce from farmers, or there was another man in the business of going to the market in Muskegon or Grand Rapids and bringing back a load of produce and furnishing it that way. Things that wouldn't be grown around here, like head lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
And bananas. Bananas came by the bunch, and when you walked in the door, right to the left was this great big hook from the ceiling with a big hole, bunch of bananas on it, and a wicked looking knife to cut off what you wanted. They had a lot of cigars and cigarettes and candy in the store. And they said the bread came from the Grand Haven Bakery Company, which was downtown in Grand Haven, run by Mr. Pat. Coffee with whole bean, and it would have to be ground to whatever you wanted. They did have a few, one company, a White House Coffee, that was came all ground, and it was in pasteboard boxes. The tea came in a great big box that was lined with lead foil, not tin foil, but lead foil, and that was heavy. And, of course, all of these things are bulk. They had to be measured out to whatever the customer wanted. The sugar came in 100-pound sacks, and anybody that wanted 5 pounds of sugar, you'd take a 5-pound sack to fill it. But right. If they wanted 5 pounds of crackers, you'd have to take a 10-pound sack because they took up so much more space. The cookies were all bulk, and a lot of them came from Brock's Bakery, and other wholesale houses. The wholesale houses would send a salesman around, and he would take the order, and then the order would be sent to the stores. And there'd be so many cases, maybe cans of corn, and so many cases of soup or pork and beans or whatever. And these would be brought by a dray pulled by horses, and they came to the back door of the shop, and these were all in wooden boxes. And the boxes, when they were emptied, had lots of uses afterwards. And so they were just tossed down the basement stairs. And down the basement, there would be potatoes. That's where the supply of potatoes would be, because they'd just all be dumped there. Mm-hmm. And also, they sold kerosene, because a lot of people cooked with that.
Oh.
And so they come with their cans of kerosene, but the first thing that got lost on the kerosene can would be the little cap that went over the spout. But that didn't make too much difference, because you fill the can with kerosene, and then you just pick up a little potato and put that on top of the spout to keep it from spilling. Coffee came in 100-pound bags, and that would have to be round. The cheese came in a big wheel of cheese, and that's the only way it came. There was no other kind, and so that would have to be cut to whatever was ordered. And all the margarine was white, and there would be a little capsule of color in that. So if you wanted to have your margarine yellow like butter, you would have to do that when you got home to work that coloring all into it.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Mm-hmm. The store had a wooden floor, and there was quite a space. Well, the door was over on one side, and then the window would be where all the produce was displayed. And then there was quite an empty space there for people to walk in and such. And that's where they would line up all these market baskets that they had to deliver.
Okay.
There was a coal stove for heating. He had a storeroom, the other half of the building. And that's where all the boxes of groceries would be, or the soup and the coffee and things that came in these wooden boxes that would be stored in this big room. Also, there were two big barrels in there, big ones, and he dumped the sugar into that because it was easier to weigh it out from a barrel. And there was the second barrel was for brown sugar.
How much variety was there at that time as far as different brands or different, different types of food?
Nothing like we have today. There would be two or three canned company, like Monarch and Hart. Some things that we have today were, of course, unheard of then. Like in liquefied soap, detergents, things of that sort. You bought American Family or Star soap to do your laundry.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, you carried cheese. Did you only have one kind of cheese, or would you have several wheels with different kinds?
I don't remember, but I imagine he had more than one kind, because some would be strong cheese and some would be. He sold cigars and cigarettes and chewing tobacco, and he had a wonderful candy case. I spent a lot of my time around that.
What kinds of candy were eaten then? Was it basically the same type of things as today?
The chocolate drops, just these chocolate creams, but you could get a pound for a dime. And there was hard candy and gum drops, and there used to be these little paraffin bottles that had a liquid in them, and so you would bite off the top and drink the liquid and chew the paraffin.
Yeah, they had those when I was a little kid still, or wax. And I hadn't thought about those in quite a while.
And then, of course, suckers. Licorice whips.
That be black licorice or red licorice or both?
As a rule.
Is black licorice pretty popular then? Growing up, I've never really known anybody that's liked it.
Oh, yes. He would charge groceries to his customers. And he had a whole lot of, I call them order books, because of things that they would take down the order in when people would telephone them, telephone the orders in. And then they would come in on payday and pay their grocery bill, and he always gave a free sack of candy. But I liked it best when he went to the bakery and paid his bill there, because then we got some beautiful candy for that. There was one very unusual thing about my dad's store, and it reflects something about the time. One of the biggest factories was Lizzie Bellotto of the tannery. And they paid on the 15th, or on the 5th and the 20th of the month. And so the People's Bank would send one of their men out with a satchel full of money. He put up a card table in this space that was there, and he put out a pile of 20s and a pile of 10s and so forth right on the card table. The people would come in with their checks and sign them, and he would cash their checks right there in the store.
Right there in the store.
And all that money red exposed.
So you could just pick up the check and get your groceries all in one place.
Yes, well, it was to my dad's advantage, because then they pay their bills too.
Right. Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Can't imagine anything like that happening today.
Now, how did the Depression affect the grocery business?
Well, there was that something before the Depression that affected them very much, and that was the coming of the chain stores. And the first one in our neighborhood was a couple of blocks down the street, and it was the Thomas Brothers store. And because of their volume purchasing, they could sell things a lot cheaper. And this really cut into the business. And then we had A&P and Kroger came in too. Mm-hmm. And so that was the thing that was the hardest on the groceries, on the little neighborhood groceries.
Well, what could a neighborhood grocer do to compete? Anything? Did he just have to rely on loyalty?
There wasn't much. A lot of them went out of business. My dad went to move the store, and they went into business with another man. And they had a store near 7th Street.
Okay.
And this was when I was in high school, so this was kind of a few years afterwards, which we'd take it into the Depression area. And being closer to downtown, they had customers that were far better financially situated than the ones that were living in the factory district, and so his business was much better down there.
Okay. I would imagine so. It would probably have been inconvenient for them to run out to a chain store in those days then? Or?
Well, some of them did because there was one big A&P store right downtown.
Oh. Where right downtown?
Where the parking lot behind Steiner's drugstore is.
Okay. I know what that is. All right. So, getting back to when you went to college, right after 2 years after high school, you went to college, and you went to
Western,
mm-hmm. and you studied education,
right.
I guess. And then, did you come back here and teach right away, or what did you do after you were done?
Because I graduated from college in 1936. See, I graduated from high school in 1930, and then I was out 2 years to earn some money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I graduated in 1936, and teaching jobs were very scarce then, so I worked in an office for a while. And then I got a job teaching in Fruitport. And I taught there 1 year, and then I got married. And my husband was still in college at the time, so I spent my first 2 years down right back down in Kalamazoo, going to the library and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay, this must have been right about the war years.
No, we were back here in 1940.
Oh, okay.
My father-in-law was killed in an automobile accident, and my husband was teaching down in Decatur, Michigan, and this tragedy occurred in the 9th of April, and so he had released from his contract. He had to come back and take over the plumbing and heating business, because he was an only child, and mother was dependent on him for her welfare.
Okay. Did the war affect your family at all?
Everything.
Yeah. How so?
Well, you had a ration book for one thing, and you could only get so much butter and so much sugar and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. In fact, I still have my ration book.
Oh.
And everything like that, gasoline and everything, was just meted out in quantities.
How were those quantities determined?
By the government.
Was it if you had to buy? Was there a formula by X amount of people?
Oh,
okay.
I didn't have anything to do with that.
Did every household get the same, or was it?
I don't know. I think it had something to
do with number of people,
with size of family, and so forth.
Okay. Did you have any relatives or anything that fought in the war? Or
were you... No. Well, which war are you talking about?
World War II. Yeah.
My husband had cousins that did.
Okay.
No. I didn't have anything.
Immediate family, though. Okay. Some were you teaching here while your husband was running the plumbing business?
I did a lot of substitute teaching. I did substitute teaching for 14 years. And then, in the meantime, I acquired a son and a daughter. And my daughter graduated from high school, went to Western, and then she decided that she wanted to get her master's right away and she wanted to go to Columbia. So I went back to full-time teaching to finance her college. And I taught for 5-6 years in sixth grade, and then I was asked if I'd be interested in taking over a library. Up to this time, the libraries were room libraries. Each room had its own set of library mm-hmm. books. And they decided to centralize the libraries.
And what school is this at?
Springlake.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I was the first librarian for all three schools that were then in the Springlake district, that would be Homeschool and Jeffers and Nunica. So I had to divide my time between three schools. Then later on there's another librarian, part-time librarian hired, and so I didn't have quite so much to do. I did that until 1976 when I retired.
Okay. Do you have any interesting stories from when you were teaching? Can you recall right offhand?
Well, the one that comes to mind is that I traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. I had some very nice trips. And I acquired a lot of things that students could use in reports and things. In fact, I still have about a dozen kits upstairs on various countries with newspapers, flags, and money, and all that kind of thing from these countries, so that they can, if they have to make a report, they've got a lot of things to use.
Right.
Well, a boy came into the library one day and he said, "What have you got about Africa?" And I said, "Well, I can probably get you a movie and get some slides or some film strips, get you some pictures." And he looked at me so disgusted and he says, "Haven't you been to Africa yet?"
Wanted to take the easy way out, huh? By the time you were teaching, did you notice school had changed in any great degree from the time you went to school?
Oh, sure. In what
ways?
Well, the material was much more interesting, for one thing. And the teachers, were more fun. They would enjoy a joke and that kind of thing. And they were... I was fortunate in having many good classes, and I even took my class at day camping.
Oh.
So, and we had lots of field trips and things like that. And I know a lot of people in town, so I had a lot of visiting speakers and things, especially related to social studies.
Right.
So, and that wasn't done when I went to school.
No, when you say the material was more interesting, do you mean...
Just the textbooks. They had a lot of pretty pictures in them, and they were written down where you could understand them, and the print was nice, too.
That was nicer. Mm-hmm. What would have, when you went to school, a textbook been like, say, a reading textbook?
Well, it would have a few pictures, but they wouldn't be drawn. They wouldn't be photographs. Mm-hmm. They were kind of simple.
Blocks. Yeah. And then.
When I went on, of course, my attitude was different, and so were the textbooks.
Okay. I think how much homework was typically assigned to a sixth grade student?
It varied with teachers and subject matter. And I don't think it wasn't the big headache it is now. We're not expected to take homework.
Oh. I would have thought it would have been more difficult in those days. That's a surprise to me.
No, because you did your work in school.
Oh, there was more time.
Yes, there weren't as many extracurricular things. Right. You didn't have to go out for band, for instance.
What about discipline when you were teaching? What sort of things would be done to deal with a problem student if there was one?
Well, I didn't have very many, fortunately, because I had a big game book. And this was my salvation when I was studying. The kids would see me in the hall. Did you bring your book? And I'd say, yes. And so I'd put it on the desk and say, let's get our work done so we can play games.
Blackmail.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Incentive or whatever. But anyway, that helped a lot. But sometimes children were sent to stand out in the hall. And if it needed the attention of the principal, that was done too.
What was expected of a student conduct-wise?
Well, they didn't fool around in my classes. I never allowed gum chewing, things like that.
About school and conduct that was expected of students. I think we pretty much wrapped that up. But this house, I wanted to get some of the history of this house on tape.
Here.
Yeah.
This house has been written up quite often.
Has it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And because we have, nobody's moved out, everything is still here.
Oh, okay.
They have lots of, for instance, there's Headlight Flashes, are you familiar with that? That publication by Grand Trunk?
No.
Well, they did one on Muskegon and they did one on Grand Haven. This is the county weekly, and this is the thing that's plastered all over the hall and Holiday Inn.
Oh.
And coming in, in fact, here's grandfather's property, and here's my father-in-law.
Okay. And we're looking at magazines here.
This used to be the center, so it still is somewhat about oral history about Spring Lake because the nature of the house and the one family living in it and so forth. And I was so concerned because I had one copy of the County Weekly and one of the highlights, and they were getting torn and falling apart and in terrible condition. And I said, what are we going to do with this? Because we didn't have copying machines then. I went upstairs and in the old garage deck there in the old barn. And I found 70 copies of this in good condition up here and a bunch of these as well.
Solve your problem.
So, concerned that we have old things here.
Since the history of the house has been done to a great extent, we'll be taking this in a slightly different direction. I mean, you've been here for a long time, obviously in this location and in the Tri-Cities for all your life. What are the main changes you've seen just in this house? Let's say when you first moved here, you were looking out your front window. What would you have seen that was different?
Well, and there was a filling station, a Texaco filling station on the corner, and then there was just a little alley, and there was a little house right across the street, and that's the way it was when I came. Grandfather at one time owned this whole block, and Clyde Anderson's house was not there then. It was built since I came.
Okay. Sights-wise and sounds-wise, I mean, I know sitting right here, you can hear quite a bit of traffic noise. Was it much quieter, say, 30, 40 years ago? Or has there always been this much traffic in the neighborhood?
Because there's a lot more cars around now.
Right.
And people, you know, many families have two cars. Then you were lucky to have one.
Mm-hmm.
And people didn't drive so far to work. They didn't work in Grand Rapids and Muskegon. They worked locally.
Have you noticed anything different, perhaps, in the attitude of people throughout the years? I mean, do you feel that people maybe identify with their community in the same way that they did? I've had other people I've talked to, and they've said, you know, it used to be, used to know everybody.
Oh, yes. You don't get acquainted with your neighbors like you used to. And because I think there's more than one reason for that. First place, with the economy as it is and people's desires as they are, it takes two checks to run a household. Because now people don't save and then buy something.
Right.
They buy something and then have to pay for it, whether they can afford it or not. And so that changes business a great deal. And so with women holding down a good job and having more, shall we say, luxuries in the household, VCRs and all this kind of thing.
Right.
And all the modern conveniences, of course, doesn't take that long to do a washing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do something else while the washing machines don't work. So people have, in spite of having more to do, I think they have more leisure because of all the labor-saving devices we have now.
Yeah. I've noticed in interviewing other people that are from Spring Lake and have been their whole life, grew up here as children, it seems like the whole village was kind of one big family. At least that's the impression I get from talking.
Yeah, I think there was all the activities took place right in your own locality. You go to Grand Haven, of course, and some people go to Grand Haven for church and things of that sort. But a lot of things were done on a village basis. But now with more mobility and more reason to go, why Spring Lake still has a lot of civic spirit, and we'll do things together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not as much need for that now, either. There are other agencies taking over some of these activities, like a United Fund.
This might be asking you to make a big generalization, but do you think on the whole people were friendlier in days gone by or more outgoing? Or
well, one thing that surprised me now, and I should be used to it by now, is how much people are using first names. Somebody you never heard of before will call up and say, "Hello, Isabel?" Well, this is so-and-so from such-and-such a company, and we'd like to let you know about our special. So that way they are very outgoing and sometimes not very acceptable.
Right.
But I think people are still very interested and how their neighbors are getting along. If they need help or anything of that sort, they're willing to get. I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of friends that I can call on.
That's good. That's great. I was thinking of something I missed when speaking of this would be your childhood and your early adult life. What affected forms of media such as radio and the movies have on lifestyles back then? Were they a pretty big part of life?
Well, we didn't have a good movie theater. There used to be Robin Hood and what was the name of the other one down in the next block? Well, when I was a little kid, but I was afraid of movies. I didn't go.
No.
And it wasn't until I was in high school when the Grand opened that I got to enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't have that much effect on me. As far as radio is concerned, radio wasn't. Was in its infancy and it wasn't all that good.
Okay.
But it did, there were a lot of good programs though, Eddie Cantor and some of these famous comedians that you'd have a chance to hear, things of that sort, and drama, and then they'd have serial stories too. So, something like the soaps.
I wondered about that because in history books, and that you get this perception that it was radio and the movies that kept America going during the Depression, and so
well, it was cheap entertainment. And if you had a radio, you didn't have to pay money to go to the movies. You had programs right there.
And you get the idea that every night, 4-8 hours a night, the whole family gathered around the radio.
Did
they?
Because
I've been finding through the course of my interviews that maybe it wasn't as big as I had been led to believe.
Well, that could be very so much with families, of course.
Yeah.
And you have to remember that it took longer to do things. You didn't have a dishwasher. You had to wash the dishes. So you didn't have as much free time to sit around and do this.
No. Did people go to bed earlier back then, too?
It all depended on their work.
Yeah. But it seems like society in general seems to be more of a later into the evening.
Nowadays,
society, yeah.
Oh yes, I think so. Things would close around 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There's much activity between after 10.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess that about does it for my questions. So we're done. And thank you very much.